He climbed the stairs without turning on the light, and when he reached Paul's door, he paused for a long moment in the darkness, remembering how his son's hands had moved with such delicate precision over the strings, filling the wide auditorium with music. He had done the wrong thing all those years ago. He had made a mistake when he handed his daughter to Caroline Gill. He'd made a choice. And so he stood here, on this night, in the darkness outside Paul's room. He knocked on the door, but Paul didn't answer. He knocked again, and when there was still no answer, David went to the bookcase and found the thin nail he kept there and slid it into the hole in the doorknob. There was a soft click, and when he turned the knob, the door swung open. It did not surprise him to see that the room was empty. When he turned on the light, a breeze caught the pale white curtain and lifted it to the ceiling. "He's gone," he told Nora. She was still in the kitchen, standing with her arms folded, waiting for the tea kettle to boil.
"Gone?"
"Out the window. Down the tree, most likely."
She pressed her hands to her face.
"Any idea where he went?"
She shook her head. The kettle started to whistle, and she didn't respond right away, and the thin, persistent wailing filled the room.
"I don't know. With Duke, maybe."
David crossed the room and pulled the kettle from the burner.
"I'm sure he's okay," he said.
Nora nodded, then shook her head.
"No," she said. "That's the thing. I really don't think he is."
She picked up the phone. Duke's mother gave Nora the address of a post-show party, and Nora reached for her keys.
"No," David said. "I'll go. I don't think he wants to talk to you right now."
"Or to you,"
she snapped. But he saw her understand, even as she spoke. In that moment, something was stripped away. It all stood between them then, her long hours away from their cottage, the lies and the excuses and the clothes on the beach, his lies too. She nodded once, slowly, and he was afraid of what she might say or do, of how the world might be forever changed. He wanted, more than anything, to fix this moment in place, to keep the world from moving forward.
"I blame myself," he said, "for everything."
He took the keys and went out into the soft spring night. The moon was full, the color of rich cream, so beautiful and round and low on the horizon. David kept glancing at it as he drove through the silent neighborhood, along streets solid and prosperous, the sort of place he'd never even imagined as a child. This is what he knew that Paul didn't. The world was precarious and sometimes cruel. He'd had to fight hard to achieve what Paul simply took for granted. He saw Paul a block before the party, walking down the sidewalk with his hands shoved into his pockets, his shoulders hunched. There were cars parked all along the road. No place to pull over, so David slowed and tapped the horn. Paul looked up, and for a moment, David was afraid he might run.
"Get in,"
David said, and Paul did.